This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, in for the lovely Clem for a couple of weeks as we approach the business end of the season at the top and bottom of all three leagues, with Crewe Alexandra's relegation fate from Sky Bet League One sadly sealed on Saturday following their 2-0 loss at Doncaster Rovers, which also saw the club part company with manager David Artell after nearly 5.5 years. Elsewhere, there's still much to be resolved, and on this week's episode, we'll be talking to a Championship manager who, despite a couple of disappointing results in the last two games, still very much has his eyes set on making the playoffs for the chance of a return to management in the Premier League.
The club should be in and around the top six and battling it out to get out of the division. So we are, and we expect and demand a performance.
We'll meet the 32-year-old midfielder who's just capped an impressive few weeks by being named as Sky Bet League One's Player of the Month for March.
It will hit me one of these days, and I'm sure it won't be a good feeling, but I still feel as if I'm 21, to be honest.
And having been asked to step up and hold the fort for a few weeks, we speak to the interim boss whose side have had such a good run of form of late that they could well be bagging themselves an automatic promotion place out of Sky Bet League 2.
The finishing line is in sight, but you know, I'm going to say it's about Hartlepool first and foremost, and then we'll take the last four after that.
It's the official EFL podcast. Right, so now I'm delighted to be joined by a man who knows a thing or two about promotion to the Premier League. And leading the charge for Borough, of course, is their boss, Chris Wilder. Chris, thank you very much for joining us as we enter towards a very busy period of the season. Just give us a reflection on the past week or so from the Borough point of view.
Well, I think one of the things that you have to quickly overcome as a professional footballer, especially at this stage of the season, is disappointment. And it certainly there was, you know, a huge amount of disappointment after Saturday. It was a game that, listen, it was a difficult game, Dave, and to be fair to all, the away record is pretty decent over the last sort of five or six games. So we understood the challenge ahead of us, and unfortunately just didn't get the job done. So, but quickly moving on to a really important pivotal point of the season. It was quite a strange week, really. You know, we come back off international break, we win comfortably at Peterborough 4-0, fabulous result, fabulous performance, and even, you know, a great performance on Wednesday night against the champions elect, and really disappointing to not come away with anything from that game. And we had as you know, been in the game for a long time as a player, the sort of the optimism going into the weekend, the training levels were really good. You know, we recovered Thursday, we trained really well Friday, and for the first 20-25 minutes we were good, but we sort of got a little bit frustrated. They made it difficult, which they've got every right to. I know there's a lot of talk at the moment about shapes. I just listened to Diego Simeone going on about it. I'll never criticise anybody. I think that's the beauty of the game. People play in every different way, and they came to do a job on us, and they did a job on us. And full credit to Scholler and his team. And but me looking at our team, we were, in isolation of the game, we were just, you know, our sort of levels in terms of performances weren't as they have been. So, but moving quickly on, as we have to, into a huge weekend. So, of course, the mood sort of changes around the place. It shouldn't change that much because we've got so much to play for, as quite a lot of teams have over this weekend, and we have to dust ourselves down and go again.
Yeah, it was that contrast in games, as you say, because we were up there, obviously, for the Fulham game, and that classic one of looking at the two sides and there's nothing to part them, really. There were chances that you had, specifically in the second half, some very, very good chances. And then, obviously, they've got someone who's now got 38 goals, who scores a terrific header, and then he manages to seal all 3 points. And then with the Hull City game, the game that I watched, there was a real sense of frustration from you as well with that sense of taking chances once again. And do you get the feeling that in the Championship and in this quest for getting into the playoffs and promotion, it's these finest of margins that could make the difference come the end of the season.
Yeah, big moments. And it's not always big moments at the top of the pitch. You know, I think, you know, I'm subject to objective pruts, like, you know, you see through experience, your eyes and watching your team. And, you know, if they've played well, or you know that we've not been as
can't kid yourself, can you, with that opinion right now?
Not at all. But then you come out with sort of the stats and sort of you look at the possession that we had, and then I go back into my old school sort of realistic, well, there's a reason we haven't took our chances. But it's both ends as well. You know, we were disappointed with their goal. You know, it was basically their second shot on target, really. So it's about making sure that the bit in the middle has been pretty good since we've walked through the door, really. We've got some really good technical players. I think you know how we play in and out of possession, the structure to it, but it's ultimately what happens in both boxes that decides games. And then, like you, when you're talking about that, what you're talking about is the fine margins, is the detail of the Fulham goal in terms of an organisational point of view, letting Mitrovic, you know, everything is based, all their set plays is based about getting Mitrovic free and clear, and we suffered. We didn't do our job right on that.
But I mean, specifically in that, and I'm looking at this purely from like an analytical point of view. So, as you know, you've worked with us, you know the access that we've got to all the different angles and everything that we talk about. Right, we're going to talk about this. So when you look at that, and don't worry, I'll move on from a Fulham defeat in just a second. But that Mitrovic goal, it's a wonderful ball in. It's a good header. But as you're saying, and I hopefully pride myself on, if my passing wasn't great, my organisation was pretty good. So looking around, right, that man's got a lot of goals this season. Can somebody go and stand near him to make sure he doesn't get it? So when you're a boss there watching that happen, and this is me not throwing players under the bus at all, but semblance of looking at it going, yeah, but look who scored the goal. He can't have opportunity.
So you do wind it back, really, in terms of how did it get to that situation, even sort of, you know, from 30, 45 seconds before, we've just punted a ball down the middle of the pitch where we have an opportunity of retaining possession and building from that position, and then a poor free kick given away. So all of these things are talked about. You know, we've all seen the quality that Harry Wilson's got. Don't give away free kicks away in those sort of areas, because he has that ability to put it anywhere where he wants to be. And as well, like we said, the amount of sort of analysis that goes on in the game now, you know, we're looking back, you know, right the way through the season, and all full of set plays, and they all revolve around Mitrovic. So, we got caught out, and there was a substitution there that should have been more bright and alert in terms of what was happening. There was an overload on one side of the pitch that we should have dealt with. And then all of a sudden, it's sort of littered, when you analyse it, perhaps, it's sort of littered with about five or six mistakes.
And it's a culmination in the end of those.
Yeah, it's all come together, and he's still got to head the ball in the back of the net, and still I think the goalkeeper should save it as well. So it's possibly about half a dozen mistakes in the lead up to the goal. And you're playing Fulham, and you're playing, you know, and when you're playing well, those things can't really, you know, it's soul destroying when they sort of hurt you, because, you know, credit to the players, the way they took the game to the opposition second half. You know, after, you know, it was possibly first 20, 25 minutes, they started better than us, and then we sort of grew into the game, and especially second half, we really took the game to the opposition, and afterward they scored. But ultimately, fine margins and small detail and big moments. So, and big moments in both boxes.
Before we look ahead to the busy Easter weekend, just coming into Middlesbrough, and obviously that portion of time that you have away from actually being front and centre managing a football club, how did you find that? Because you strike me as a man that absolutely adores the challenge of what it is. And even though you're talking about there, that's something that's extremely frustrating as a small portion of what it is to run a football club. You look to me at your most alive when you're in charge of a group of people that you're leading forward. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I tell you what is frustrating, not working. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah, I can see that as well. Yeah.
Up every morning and and having to do stuff that you don't really want to do, but you do it. I've got a lovely family, and
there's seen enough of that lovely family, isn't there, as well?
I think from their point with me as well, Dave, as well. Just being at the coalface. I've been, as I talked about, you know, from as we do, whatever aspect in football you work at, whether it's from your point of view and what you're doing fantastically well, but from when you were as a kid right the way through, football is part and parcel of your life, and it's been there ever since I was 16. So to come out of it, and we all come out of it at periods, but yeah. I certainly wasn't wanting to come out of it, as you know, and I wanted to get back as soon as possible. So getting stuck into a job and a club like Middlesbrough was really exciting, and this is where I want to be.
Has the Championship changed at all in the period of you getting into the Premier League and obviously coming out of Sheffield United and the teams and the general, I don't know, standard, for want of a better word, has it changed much? Is it always going to be similar to you, do you think?
I think it's always going to be an incredibly tough division to get out of. Well, I think there was a study done by Sheffield Hallam University regarding sort of parachute payments and the advantage that relegated clubs get in terms of getting straight back up. And I think if you just look at the stats point of view, it's not straightforward. And there's been some clubs that have found it incredibly difficult. You know, Stoke City's found it incredibly difficult. Middlesbrough's found it incredibly difficult. But it does weigh heavily in terms of the relegated clubs going straight back up. And I think, you know, and this is not me being clever or putting anything on anybody. You know, I think before a ball was kicked, I think if everybody had looked at it, they would have said Fulham, Sheffield United, West Brom and Bournemouth would have been challenging for the top two and playoff places. And then anything can happen underneath that. I think you've got to give an enormous amount of credit to the likes of Blackburn and Luton in terms of the seasons that they've had, Coventry in terms of the season that they've had, and you would have expected, and rightly so, that Middlesbrough should be in and amongst it. Sheffield United should be in and amongst it. Forest should be in and amongst it. And there's a couple that maybe have disappointed in that. So it sort of always has that sort of feel to it. Overachievers, teams that should be in around it, and underachievers, really. But the relentlessness of the season is still there. I said just before the international break, there's a lot of tired players, there's a lot of tired teams. You know, pressure still obviously mounts towards this part of the season. We're all looking for consistency. And as well, the shock results come thick and fast. And one thing that I did remind, I think through experience, I don't want to ram down what happened at my previous club, but I think it was in that promotion season, I think it was four games to go. We played Millwall at home, started off the game really well, went 1-0 up. John Egan gets sent off in the 90th minute. They miss a penalty in the 90th minute. And you think it's going to be our day. Millwall equalise in the 95th minute. We have a player of the year do at the end at that night. And everybody's doom and gloom. That's it. It's all dusted. And I think sort of three or four days later, early kickoff, we play Forest, and then, which you will remember and recognise, is the Leeds United Wigan game, which changed everything. Sheffield United played Forest, early kickoff on Sky, got the job done. Game was on in my office. Leeds get a penalty. Wigan go down to 10 men. Leeds stick that penalty away. Turn that TV off. They're not going to lose that. That's them done and dusted. That's them. They're in the Premier League. Oh, dear me. We're going to have to go through. I mean, which would have been a brilliant achievement getting in the playoffs with Sheffield United. Then all of a sudden, I get somebody knocks on the door with about 20, 25 minutes to go and goes, have you seen the scoreline at Elland Road? Wigan are winning 2-1. And all of a sudden, the dynamics of the season changed.
Completely shifted.
Half now, which can happen. So these shock results can happen right the way through. And, listening, it might happen to us, it might happen to everybody in the division. So, you know, especially with five games to go, there's absolutely nothing set in stone and anything can happen. And I think that's the weird and wonderful world of the Championship that you don't really get in the Premier League. You know, you don't really get anybody turning Liverpool over, anybody turning Man City over, or those at this stage of the season. Whether that's just the unique quality and the incredible quality that those teams have at the top of the Premier League, and maybe the vulnerability that we all have being involved in the Championship.
Well, it's certainly a huge part, isn't it? And I can always rely on Chris Wilder to stay on brand with the official EFL podcast, singing its praises. So thank you very much for that, Chris. But you talk about those teams that are up there, that should be up there, that were mooted to be up there before the season starts. You've got a couple coming up, obviously with Bournemouth and Huddersfield, that they've attacked the league in slightly different ways. The expectations, you say, possibly on Bournemouth, given where they have been in recent seasons. Yeah. You look at perhaps the week that they've had running up into the Easter weekend. I presume from your point of view, that's put into context because, I mean, they're a team not to be taken lightly at all, are they, sitting second in the Championship?
No, especially the sort of the business that they did in January as well and that they had, you know, before. And we played them in one of my early games here and it was a fabulous game and we managed to win a really tight game. They missed a couple of chances first half and we got our noses in front and stayed there. But in a way, Pruts, like, you know, these games, you know, we get our performance right. These games I'm a little bit more comfortable with, you know, the Bournemouth and the Huddersfield games because they're going to be much more open games and both clubs, you know, and this is where no disrespect to all, but both clubs will incredibly fancy the chances of winning the game of football. And so obviously makes it a little bit of a sort of a more of a different feel and a different game to the one we had on Saturday. And maybe that might suit us a little bit more. Maybe it won't. If we get the result, we don't get the performance right on Saturday afternoon, I might be changing my tune a little bit. The two great games to be involved in. I think, you know, obviously when we took over, I don't think anybody would have thought we would have been in this position. And I don't really want to go down that road. You know, I think it's quite easily and cheap to say, well, if we'd have taken this position, you know, at this stage of the season, everybody would have been delighted. So, you know, because we're here and we want to win. And the club should be here, if we've been totally honest about it. The club should be in and around the top six. And battling it out to get out of the division. So we are, and we expect and demand a performance.
Well, that's a tough thing, isn't it? I presume from a manager's point of view, that perception element, you want to come in, that you've got to come in on a crest of good PR, and it would be very easy to say, right, promotion or bust, but then you're the one that's got to deliver that. You're the one that has to provide that. And you've got to be realistic and positive about what your squad can do, but you've also got to mitigate and let people know, just like you say, just how tough the Championship is. As much as we've seen Fulham look dominant in certain respects, they've still not quite got the job done. You see the result against Coventry at the weekend. There's some that you can't see coming. There's some that you think would be a bit more straightforward. But that's what I've always enjoyed about specifically your teams as well. That battle that comes with that, the challenge that's laid down, because that feels to me like, as I said, it's something that's inherent in you. But then that's what you lay out to your players every single day. I mean, you're not going to get to where I took a team of players to go and play Premier League football without being, in essence, that team to start with and being able to ride the challenge.
I think we can beat Barcelona. If we're playing Barcelona on Saturday, I think we've got a bit of a chance here, boys. But I think that's just the way we're all brought up. I think that's the reason that we were pros, that we are competitive in whatever we do. We're not looking at it and going, you know, let's keep it down, you know. 3-0 up after about 20 minutes, you might say, well,
let's see. Tough task now, chaps.
Right, yeah, it's going to be quite a difficult last hour of this, boys. Let's not go, what are you doing? Something like escape to victory. I think we can win this.
If that's the approach from here on in, the escape to victory approach to getting into the Premier League via Borough.
Shut up. So, but I think that's the sort of... The mentality that we all have as pros, and having sort of the career that you've had, where you've played, and you do. I don't think you go into any game thinking, you know, this is foregone conclusion. So of course, as I said, it's easy to make bold statements and say, well, they should go up, but it doesn't always happen. As I said, this club's been in the division for a long, long time. Previous club was in League One for 6 years. You know, Sunderland, Portsmouth, you see that Ipswich, you see these huge clubs, you know, that can't get out of League One, let alone get out of the Championship. And then you look at the Championship and you look at the table and you go, 80% of those football clubs have been in the Premier League.
Yeah, they've all had a taste, haven't they?
All had a taste, and not 20, 25, 30 years ago, you know, when it was the old First Division. Recently, you know, they've all been in and around it.
Yeah, and that's what they're all scrapping for. You just, without wanting to talk about me in this, to wrap it up, and don't worry, this is only a very, very quick question. You mentioned the clubs that I play for. One of them was Scunthorpe. One of them was managed by your trusted lieutenant, Alan Neil. Just give us a little insight into that particular relationship, because it's obviously a working relationship that's borne you both a hell of a lot of success, isn't it?
Yeah, we both had a little bit of a taste of it before, but it works. I mean, my relationship with Al goes back to when we were young players at Southampton, when I was an apprentice young pro and he was. So, and then sort of, as you do, your paths cross right the way through. He moved to South Yorkshire. So obviously that was my patch as well. And didn't really play against each other a lot, but come across each other. And knew his values as well, being brought up in that environment at Southampton as the environment I was brought up in as well. So he's played a huge part, as I think, you know, all the staff do. I think there's, of course, there's a lot given to the manager, but I think there's been a documentary about Liverpool recently, and I think they talk about, you know, the people that they work with. And I think Klopp talks about the people that he works with, and as you know, a team in a team, really. So, you know, it's work. We're very tight. We have the same ideas how we want to play. We want the same ideas and how we want to look. And from not just from a tactical and technical point of view, from a physical and from a mentality point of view as well, maybe through the upbringing. So, yeah, it works. We're not ringing each other up, you know, every other hour. You know, we'll have a pint with each other now and again, but you know, he does his things and I do mine. But it's, as I said, it's really, really important. I think everybody, you know, especially now, understands that, you know, at what level you're working with, that the staff are incredibly important. And I've got to say, I've inherited a good group as well. I was one of those managers as well, Dave, that, you know, when I came in, I wanted to see what I've got as well, you know, in the building, because there's some really good people that don't want to come in. I think there's been a couple of managers that have come in and brought about 10 or 15 people in. I think there was a certain one, if you play for him at Forest, like, who came in and Davis sort of brought about 12, 13, 14, 15 people.
I think I just missed Billy at that time. So no, but I know exactly what you mean. That carte blanche sometimes approach where they come in and like you say, suddenly the players looking around going, well, there's no one here that looks remotely familiar. He's brought him in. What does he do? What do you do? And you're absolutely right. Does that come with a bit of experience, as having that wherewithal to say, well, this is what I bring, this is my background, but I'm very interested to hear what you do, what you can bring?
Absolutely, definitely. And there's some talented people here that maybe, you know, I needed to get the maximum out of them, and still trying to do that. Of course, you know, you have your ways of working, and if you don't think they fit into how you want it to look, then you have to make those sort of changes. But you know, some experienced guys here, some quality ones, and I'm really enjoying working with the people here as much as the people that I've worked with, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, it seems to be the case, and I'm sure all Borough fans listen to this hoping that alchemy is once again part of what happens at the end of this season. We wish you all the best. Chris, thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast. It's a busy Easter, and good luck with the rest of the season, my friend.
Cheers, bros. Take care, mate.
So, in the Sky Bet Championship this weekend, it's a full programme of fixtures on Good Friday. We've just been speaking to Chris Wilder. His Borough boys travelling to Bournemouth in search of points to keep their playoff push on track. Luton Town host Nottingham Forest in the lunchtime game at Kenilworth Road. A Midlands derby sees Coventry travel to St Andrews to face Birmingham City, whilst Hull entertain Cardiff, bottom of the table. Peterborough welcome Blackburn Rovers to London Road. Millwall travel to Preston, and Paul Heckeybottom's Sheffield United host Paul Ince's Reading at Bramall Lane. Stoke take on Bristol City, Swansea take on Barnsley, and West Brom against Blackpool complete the remaining 3 o'clock fixtures, with QPR travelling to Huddersfield for a 5:30 kickoff, and the evening game sees Derby County at home to league leaders Fulham.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Well, now I'm delighted to introduce a man who's made almost 300 appearances in the blue and white of Sheffield Wednesdays. In his seventh season now with the Owls, which has covered the full range of footballing in motion, the very vision of perpetual motion and the beating heart in the Wednesday midfield. It is, of course, Barry Bannum.
Hi, good morning, Pritch, you all right?
I'm very well, my friend. How are you? Thank you very much for joining us today. Firstly, is it a day off? Is it a chance to rest the legs after what's been a very hectic period of the season?
Yeah, we've got the day off today. We had Sunday, Monday off, which don't normally happen. Normally we're in on Mondays. But because of the period in the games and the players that have been having to ask to play every game, really, the gaffer gave us an extra day off. So we were in yesterday, had a bit of a blowout, and then off today. And then we'll go on Thursday and prepare for MK Dons on Saturday.
I mean, it's a big game coming up, isn't it? But you come into it off the back of a strong run of form, basically six unbeaten going into this one, and it's fair to say, isn't it, I mean, League One is a very, very challenging league. There's a lot of expectations, particularly if you are as big as Sheffield Wednesday. How have you found it so far?
Yeah, it's been tough. The season's been hard. I think, me personally, I think the league's a lot better than I thought it was going to be, but that comes from the amount of teams that are probably trying to get out of it. There's big teams in the league now where previous years it was probably one or two. There's probably five or six that have spent big in the summer to try and get out. So it's been a really challenging league. For us personally, we've had a lot of injuries at bad times, so we've done well to stick in and around it. And we always said at the start of the season our aim was to get promoted, and we've put ourselves in a great position to go and do that. So it's in our hands now, and there's a big five games left that we need to take each game at a time. And like I said, we've put ourselves in the position where we wanted to be at the start of the season. So we're looking forward to finishing the season as strong as we can.
That's the great thing, isn't it? I mean, regardless of what division Sheffield Wednesday are in, the expectations there, the wants and the need from the fans to be able to be one of the teams up at the top, knocking on the door of the next division and looking for promotion. How have you found it? I mean, this season, has there been a broader acceptance of where Wednesday are at the moment, or is it still that very much demand is there, the pressure is there to be able to be as good as you possibly can be for Wednesday?
Yeah, we're not happy where we are. We expect to be doing a bit better. Like you touched on, the expectation from the outside is massive at that club, and from the inside as well. As players, we set out at the start of the season to go and finish number one, but it's not happened. But like we said, if we can get out the league this year, that was the main aim at the start of the season, was just to get promoted no matter what way we could. So like I said, it's a big pressure every time you put on that blue and white jersey, but that's why we're in football. I thrive on that. I love playing under pressure. I'd rather be in the position we are now than mid-table and basically on holiday already. So, yeah, it's always an expectation there, and the boys quickly come to terms with that, the new ones that we signed, because we brought a lot of players in the summer that had to get to grips with what this club was all about. And you know yourself from being here that there's an expectation and you need to be made of a certain kind of cloth to be able to play for this club.
I think as well, what we found so fascinating towards the end, because obviously covering the football like we do and seeing the games in the run into what was that helter-skelter final day, and you're watching the pictures come in and you're looking at players that you know like yourself, and the pain of it all, as much as you are passing through a football club as a footballer, you do feel the emotion. You absolutely dial into what it is to be a Sheffield Wednesday player. And you could see on your face the pain of the position that Wednesday had found themselves in, but also how that was reflected on the fans as well. And it seemed to be a really genuine reaction from you of wanting to stay there to put things right. Has that been the main driving force this season for you?
Yeah, well, I feel as if I owe the club something now after last season. I'm just, when I go, when if I play any sport or whatever I'm playing, I'm a winner, I want to win. And I've always been like that since growing up. I've probably got a bit better at losing as I've got older a little bit. But my mum and dad and stuff like that, when I was growing up, said I was a nightmare. Computer games, brothers. I used to play football with my brothers. They used to grab me up because I was that small and just pick me up and move me out of the way. And it used to break my temper. So I've always had a willingness to win. And obviously when we got relegated last year, it hit me hard, obviously, from losing. You feel not embarrassed, kind of a little bit embarrassed because you've got to go home to your family after what's just happened and you get unlucky and stuff like that. But so it did really hit hard. But yeah, that was a big driving force as well. Obviously, I could have moved in the summer. I had options, but I feel as if how the club have treated me and the fans and how good they've been to me over the years to walk out when I was the club captain for my first year when we got relegated. It wouldn't have sat right with me through the rest of my life. So I've made it a big thing for me to go and try and get this club back to where they belong.
Well, it's an amazing thing to be able to say and it for it to be extremely genuine, Baz, because having worked with you and interviewed you before and watched you play, there's no hiding place for you. There's a real streak of authenticity to everything that you do. And watching the games and sitting with people that really do love football and that really do enjoy the way that you go about your job, which is exactly what the Wednesday fans, you feel, have felt over the course of your career there. When you look at someone in charge like Darren and what he's brought to the side, does that dovetail in with the kind of approach that you've brought as skipper? Have you got similar thoughts and feelings and approaches to the way that you go about winning football matches?
Yeah, we have. He wants to play the right way, which I think is the right way playing football as well. He wants to play forward attacking, play out from the back. And I was encouraged by that. As soon as he came in, I seen a little bit of his Doncaster team. And I'd obviously ask questions when the gaffer had come in, what they played like and people had played under him. And they all had nothing but good words to say about him. So it kind of shocked me a little bit with how his style was, because from watching him as a player, I didn't expect him to be that style. But he's,
what do you mean by that?
Well, you wouldn't want to go on a 50-50 with him, would you, anyway, that's for sure.
He was a terrifying presence on a football pitch, I can attest to that. As beautiful a human being as he is, my word, you're absolutely right. 50-50, no thanks.
He's the complete opposite as a person, though. He's like calm and he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in football, to be honest. And then I watch like Premiership years and see how he was on the pitch. It's it's quite contrasting. But no, he's been brilliant. He's had a lot to fix out at the club as well, because as everyone knows, last season was a tough place and a tough club to be at. And he's came in and turned it around. The culture of the club, just little things like, I don't know, it goes a long way. Kind of like bringing the media team up to the training ground and having them feel part of it and being in and around the boys, feeling comfortable. Just little things like that. It's brought like more of a family kind of thing to the club, which we probably didn't have in years. And I'm not saying that's added to the results and stuff, but even little things like families coming to games, all the girls and wives and that are close mates now, and they've all bought into what we're trying to achieve this season, and that's come from how the gaffers stamped his authority on the club.
That's amazing, really, isn't it? Because that sense of togetherness is what gets you through periods such as this, when you have had tricky times on the pitch to deal with. As a side, you do need to stick together. And you talk about that over the course of the season, and you mentioned it earlier on, there's a presumption that Sheffield Wednesday of any incarnation drops into League One and walks it. But you're playing against teams that know that league, know specifically how to work that division. A Rotherham side, of course, that's bounced in between the two. They know how to get the job done. You mentioned MK Dons and Wigan. It's no straightforward jog to the finish line, is it? And you, as you're alluding to, Barry, you said between now and the end of the season, there's big, big games coming up that are in your hands to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, well, we've found it difficult at the start of the season because we didn't know the league. A lot of us haven't played in it. And every time we went and played, even if we drew a game, and teams were celebrating as if they'd won the game. So then we quickly realised that everybody who we played against was given that extra bit more because of Sheffield Wednesday, Hillsborough, and we had to get to grips with that every team that plays against us is like a cup final for them. And then you've got your teams who push big in the summer, even teams like Ipswich, who I think spent a lot of money hoping that they would get there, a massive club as well. You've got Sunderland, who have been in there for a few years. And then, as you touched on, you've got your Wickhams and Rotherhams, who are probably experts at getting out of League One. Absolutely. So we knew it was going to be tough, and it has been tough. But like I said, we've got big games coming up. We've got it in our hands now. It's up to us if we want to go and grab it and actually do something with it. So that's what we wanted to do when we set out, and we've eventually got there.
The Easter weekend that's coming up always used to be one of those in football. It's a real signpost, isn't it? Because you, in theory, the weather's changing, but it'll probably be snowing this weekend, which completely kiboshes me saying this. But that sense of the bulk of the hard work of the season's behind you. Spring has sprung. You've got your eyes on the finish line, and it's a quick turnaround in games. But the question that I was going to ask you was about dealing with a hectic run of fixtures. But given what we've seen from a media point of view, watching the games off the back of COVID and dealing, working through the pandemic, is there a part of your body now that's attuned to playing lots of games in a small period of time? Because getting that one season finished into another season, getting that through it and making sure that it got to an end, because we were showing quite a lot of the games, that we were watching you 2-3 times a week, and it was that hectic. That is that now the norm for a footballer? That very low recovery period between games is just how it is?
Yeah, I think if you ask most footballers, they prefer it. There's nothing better than match day. Training, it's good, but you would rather, it's not the same as playing in a match. So me personally, I've been quite lucky to stay injury free now for the last couple of seasons. So once you're in the run of things, you just, yeah, it's like you said, you just become accustomed to it and it feels normal. Your recovery time's less, but you do everything right at the training ground. You've got the best physios and stuff to help you with that. But yeah, I probably prefer playing games and training. Mm. Training nowadays, it's actually getting less and less because of how many games there are. You're not really doing anything. When you do go into the training ground, it's for a recovery day. You're not doing much.
It's more maintenance than anything else.
It's more maintenance just to keep your body, get your body right for the next game, really. So that's another thing that the managers this season have had the problem with. They probably not had the chance to work with the players as much as they would on the training ground because of how many games there's been.
And you talk about that work element to it and how you feel and your fitness record in the past few seasons. Given the nature of the way that you play football and get about a football pitch, any aches and pains, any creaks with the advancing of age, talking to a very young man in front of me, but in the sense of, in a footballing sense, there's... And this is me preempting that you probably play to about 45 now, but the sense of there's a lot of games under the belt and you're in a position now as the experienced, one of the elder statesmen of the squad. How are you feeling physically day to day, game to game?
I feel great, to be honest. I've been saying my missus and people around me, like, when is it actually going to hit? I've asked like people who have been here and done it as well. And obviously I've heard people saying it just hits you one day. So, as of yet, no, I feel fine. I don't feel as if I've lost any of my pace and my explosiveness, really. I still feel as if I'm 21, to be honest. But like I've touched on, it will hit me one of these days. Mm. And I'm sure it won't be a good feeling. But no, I feel great, touch wood. And I've not seen any major differences. Obviously, I have the aches and pains, but I've had that for a while anyway. So you just come to live with that and get on with it.
The good thing is, isn't it? It's you get to an age where you know how to manage your body, and the manager lets you manage your body in the right way. Because as long as you're getting, as you say, 7-8 out of 10 out of a player on a match day, I mean, that bit in between that gets him today is very bespoke and very individual, particularly to you. Looking between now and the end of the season, obviously you've got to err on the positive, and the message that you're putting across is one very much of that, Barry, and it's one very much of Wednesday in that shake-up in the top six come the end of the season. And it's with a club like Sheffield Wednesday, it's something, as you say, you've not kept it a secret. It's been stated from the start, hasn't it? This is exactly what our season's about. And then after that, I suppose the test of character and the metal comes from as and when, if you manage to get yourself locked into the playoff places, then dealing with the emotion of that. Is that a part of the season that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah, I am. Like we touched on earlier in the show, I love pressure, and we've got loads of that coming up, going to teams who are above us in the league and are in and around us in the next couple of games. They're the games that you want to play in. The game on Saturday's on Sky, people will be watching, so it's a massive, massive game, and it's the games that, as kids growing up, you want to play in. Everybody's dreamt of playing at Wembley. We've gave ourselves a chance of that. So, yeah, there's lots to play for, and it's something that us as a squad are looking forward to. We're taking each game as it comes, but everybody's excited for this finishing line coming up and how we can get over it.
Well, I'll say from my point of view, Baz, having had the pleasure of knowing that football club like I have done in the past, it's somewhere that's the passion's very evident. They respect players that can, as they say, put a shift in. It helps if you can pass a ball as exquisitely as you can, whereas I just ran around quite a lot. But there'll be a fondness in the heart, mate, for what you've done for them over the course of several seasons so far. And going into Easter and off the back of that and into the end of the season, we wish you all the best and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Pruts. Top man. Thank you.
Right then, your Easter weekend in Skybet League One looks like this. And these are all 3 o'clock kickoffs on Good Friday. Accrington host Burton, Morecambe travel to Charlton, and it's Cheltenham Town versus Gillingham. Already relegated crew Alexandra welcome AFC Wimbledon to Gresty Road, who are in danger of joining crew in League Two next season if they're not careful. Doncaster entertain Bolton, Oxford travel to Fleetwood, and Danny Cowley's Portsmouth play host to former club Lincoln City at Fratton Park. Sunderland versus Shrewsbury and Wickham against Plymouth complete the Friday's schedule with just 3 games in League One on Saturday. The 12:30 kickoff sees Paul Warne's Rotherham in need of league points at home to tricky opponents Ipswich Town. At 5:15, league leaders Wigan host Cambridge United, and Barry Bannon's Sheffield Wednesday travel to MK Dons for the 7:45 game on Saturday night.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Right now, it's my absolute pleasure to talk to the acting manager of Port Vale, a team that are absolutely flying at this moment in time, Andy Crosby. Andy, welcome along to the EFL podcast.
Good afternoon, David. Nice to see you.
And it's nice to see you too, my friend. Thanks for putting time in your very busy schedule, which at the moment is a schedule that's hoovering at points and looking very rosy indeed. How is the feeling amongst yourself and the players?
Yeah, very good. As you can imagine, when you're winning games, the environment is bubbly and happy, and the lads are delighted to be in. We've got decent momentum. We're obviously on a good run of form. But we also know that that can change very quickly. So it's important that we focus on the future. We've collected points over the last month, 6 weeks, and are playing well. But it's also about the next game, and that's Hartlepool on Friday.
Well, certainly testament to the momentum that you're talking about. 7 wins in 8, 1 defeat in 17, 28 points from the 12 games that you've taken charge of. Let me think. If there's opposition managers listening to this, I won't ask for what the secret is, but can you put your finger on the main strands of why it's going so well?
No, I think as a football club, you know, Carol and Kevin bought the football club 3 years ago, and it's obviously been a very difficult time in that period with COVID and having no crowd and no fans coming through the door. So difficult for them, challenging from a financial point of view. But the structure they tried to put in place 14, 15 months ago with Dave Flitcroft coming in as director of football and then bringing Daryl in as first team manager. And I joined, so to speak, on a temporary basis in March and signed the permanent contract in June. And I think they've just tried to put a real good plan together, how they could progress the football club, not getting too far ahead of themselves, but basing it on real good values and what the culture and environment is like around the place on a daily basis, because we're obviously based at the stadium. We train next door to it, so we're here every day. But about taking care of everyone, taking care of the players, doing as much as we possibly can for them to make them feel valued and try and get them into a position where they can perform to the best of their ability. And as you said, with those figures and those numbers, we're in a good place.
And you talk about the structure. From the sounds of it, and having the pleasure that I do of being able to speak to people like yourself in situations such as this, it sounds like common sense for why a club would be run in a good way and you get success with it. But I think we both know well enough that it's not necessarily the norm across the board, is it? That sense of togetherness. Is that something that's been quite unique to what Port Vale has been to you so far?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. You would think that all 92 football clubs would have a plan and a structure and a way of developing them, but we all know that it's not quite that. This is a really special place, a really special club. I was managed to play over 700 games at this level and slightly above through my coaching career. I've worked in every single league, but this football club is really special. I think anyone who comes into it will learn that very, very quickly of how we say we get treated and how we valued and the things which are important to Carol and Kevin, and that transmits throughout the club.
We mentioned Carol and Kevin, the job that they've done in charge and how they've led the club through dark times, of course. I was reading up about how they were helping the surrounding area during the course of the pandemic. And You talk about the outreach and the fact that Vale Park is your home and you operate in and around that home and your feelers go out into the surrounding community, which again gives them affords them so much respect and admiration for how they go about it. Are they at this stage now? Do you have to manage any form of expectation with regards to that? Because it is a very, very exciting time, isn't it?
Of course it is, but I think we've also come a long way in a short period of time. We finished off last season with eight wins and a draw, I think, out of the last 11. So We built up some momentum. There was a massive changeover in playing personnel in the summer. I think over 14, 15 players came in. So we were starting afresh, so to speak, but the players who had been at the football club over a period of time were really good professionals. I'd already bought into what the gaffer and the club were trying to do. And when players came in June and July and we started pre-season, you could just tell straight away. I think, when you've been in the game, you sense it, that what a good dressing room looks like. And there was bonds formed very quickly. Now we all know that we're also ultimately judged on results on the pitch, and we didn't get off to the best of start in terms of results. But you could see that we were growing as a team and as a club, and that trajectory has continued. So onwards and upwards, so to speak. We are progressing. That there is a structure in place. We all know what success means at the end of the season, but this club is going in the right direction without a shadow of a doubt.
Goal scorers also help, don't they? And in someone like Jamie Proctor, you've got a man that certainly knows where the goal is, alongside James Wilson as well. I mean, the goals that they've come by, the form that they've found themselves in, as you say, the growing into the season. Jamie was talking about he knows what a good dressing room feels like because he's seen a lot of them. He knows what a good club environment feels like because he's seen a lot of them. Yeah. So that you've got a player there with the experience, but also showing that even a player that's moving towards that stage of his career wants to feel at home, wants to feel part of something. And there's a certain strand to the way that Jamie was talking that puts his form down to exactly what you're talking about, Andy, being part of a family that's all moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the two guys you've mentioned have obviously been further up the food chain, so to speak, earlier on in the careers. I've had different issues that came into the club in the summer. And have played a massive part in where we currently are at. And the current form is very good. Both got different strengths on and off the pitch, but complement each other really, really well. And ultimately, the modern game is changing. 10, 15 years ago, centre-forwards could have a cup of coffee, couldn't they, while the opposition had the ball. And it came to get the ball back for us. But they're a massive part of how we play out possession as well. So they're in good goal-scoring form. Centre-forwards are judged on goals. And as of recently, they're in a rich vein of form. And hopefully that will continue throughout the rest of the season. And we miss them. We had a period, end of November, December, where we were playing with no centre-forwards because they were unfit. We had all five injured. So we've had challenging periods throughout the season. We've had players missing. Tom Conlon, our captain, who is a fantastic player, is missed the start of the season and has been injured since January. So we've had players missing, James Gibbons, but we've had people who've come into the team and have known the role and have got on with the gig, so to speak, and have produced levels of performance, which has been very, very good.
You talk about the levels. Has there been an approach to the season which, if you look at, say, a Forest Green or an Exeter, and you look at where Port Vale have finished in the last couple of seasons, has there been an opportunity to operate under the radar up until possibly this point when we're going to keep singing it from the rooftops?
I'm not sure. I say we didn't get off to the best of starts point-wise, so we were all maybe playing catch-up, and then we were in the top three after a really good October, September, October, early part of November. We were right up there, and, you know, COVID hit everyone. We didn't play for a month after we played at Newport away with no strikers, and we had COVID, and we didn't play for a month. So we've had issues, but so has every other team, obviously. Wrong to blame all those things on perhaps on little specks of our form, but as of now we have got momentum, we have got belief in what we're trying to do, and we are progressing, we are developing as a team, which we always thought we would do when you bring in that number of new players in the summer. And again, because of injuries, we had to add possibly more players than we thought in January. And it takes time, but we always thought we would get stronger the longer the season went on.
And I suppose as well that when you look at this final run of games, the adversity at times that you felt over the course of a season, from a mentality point of view, does that set you up as a group to be able to deal with what will now be expectation and pressure, won't it?
Yeah, again, you know, and I've had numerous conversations with the senior players that they've been in the game a long time, that they've been in and around these situations before. The noise grows the closer you get towards the end of the season, more opinions people have got. Positive and negative, if we do this, if we do that, if the opposition win that game, what does that impact on us? All we can control it is what we're trying to do, and that's our preparation for games. How well we perform fundamentally impacts the result, and then we recover and we go to the next one, and it's sort of in good stead so far.
It's very much a case, isn't it, when you talk about football, when I get the pleasure of speaking to managers and bosses like yourself, the cliche exists for a reason about taking each game as it comes and getting to the next game, because you can't get ahead of yourselves. But potentially, obviously, following the Hartlepool game, the Bristol Rovers game, which is reported to have possibly the biggest crowd in about 5 years at Vale Park, which is, it sounds tremendously exciting, but obviously it's not the occasion that you want to play, is it? It's the match that you want to play, given as well how well Bristol Rovers have done to go flying up the division as well.
Absolutely. You know, it is the cliche, but it's what we're all trying to do. It is just focus on Hartlepool. Yeah, we're obviously aware of our remaining fixtures as well and how big they could possibly be, but it's trying to stay in the present. It's trying to stay in the now and controlling what we can control.
And that, as you say, emanating that down into the players and making sure that the players know that. The group that you've got, we've mentioned Jamie, of course, and James, and there's players that should always be mentioned that Dispatch is doing their bit for the cause moving forward. It seems to be a nice mix that you've got player-wise, which once again reflects the recruitment that you've got, the ability to recruit the right, not only the right players, but it's fundamental, isn't it? And you'll know this from the dressing rooms that you've spent time, a long time in. If they're good players, but not necessarily the right type of people, that can really upset the apple cart, can't it? So you've got to be able to cover both.
I think the longer I've been in the game, it's about people. As you just said there, you could have an exceptional footballer, but a really bad personality who doesn't fit into the dressing room, and that causes problems on a daily basis. So we haven't got one player at this football club who I would be saying we need to get rid to improve the dressing room, to improve our playing style. We haven't got one, which is a credit to, one, the recruitment and the research that the guys did to bring people in. It's credit to our senior players, to our captain, to Tom Conlon, who has been, again, not part of the playing process since January, but has been scouting, watching games. We've had players on loan who've gone back to the parent clubs who are still watching games for us. And I think that's a really good reflection on us as a football club and how they were treated while they were here.
And just to focus on you for a second, Andy, with regards to your, not only your playing career, because as you say, a long, long career in the game, which once you get your foot in the door, and this is me not trying to turn this into a close conversation between two ex-professional footballers, it's tough to get yourself in there, and it's even tougher to stay there for a fairly decent amount of time, and you're testament to that. And then moving into coaching and the managers that you've worked with both domestically and internationally, it's the thing that always intrigues me about speaking to players and former teammates that then become coaches. The love of the game has to be there to be able to stick in for the good, the bad, and the ugly side of what football can be. And that motivation, is that born from within? Is that something that you look at in a manager to make sure that you keep each other on the toes? Because I was reading Nigel Adkins' take on taking the job first off at Scunthorpe United, and just knowing that I want the honest voice, Cross. I want you to tell me how it is. You don't have to be my best mate. You need that bouncing board, don't you? Being able to do that. And is that one of your fundamentals? Ask me a question, and you will get the honest answer.
I think going back to the start of the question, I think I absolutely love football. Mm. My missus will tell you that is my only thing I think about. Two things in my life, my family and football, that's what's in my life. That's, I don't need anything else. I'm quite content with what I've got. So that passion for the game will never, ever go. I've got the same passion as when I was trying to be a professional footballer. It's something I always wanted to do. And then when you come into the end of your career, you're thinking, what if? You know, I was a lower league player. I had the peak of my powers right at the end by playing in the Championship, and I wouldn't have done that apart from with Scunthorpe when we had two promotions. So then an opportunity comes up at Scunthorpe, which is never going to happen in reality. You know, that the Brian Laws and Russ Wilcox went to Sheffield Wednesday, and Nige got the gig at Scunthorpe, having been the physio and did an incredible job. And gave myself and Barra an opportunity to assist him whilst I still played for 2 years, which, you know, looking back, it's a weird situation. but as you say, once you get an opportunity, you then have to take that opportunity as well. And one of the first things Nigel said to me was that I want you on board, but I don't want you to agree with everything I say. And perhaps people who know me will say, well, I wasn't going to do that anyway. So, and you have to be honest, don't you? To be honest, and if you want to get better, you have to take feedback as well, whether it's good feedback or it's critical feedback. So yeah, I've always tried to be that way. You know, I worked with Nige for a long period of time, some incredible highs and moments with a variety of clubs, but they know I'm now working here with Daryl, and absolute utmost respect for him. I didn't know him before I came in here. We seem to connect quite quickly, and yeah, we're both desperate to try and bring success to Port Vale.
Well, certainly I'd echo those sentiments, of course, with Daryl, who I spoke to earlier on this season, and we wish him all the very best across the EFL, don't we, moving forward. Just a last one on Nigel. Have you ever seen him in a bad mood, Nigel Adkins?
Very, very rarely. I think, you know, I've grown as a person by working with Nige, and I think the people you spend the most time with, you become a reflection of them. So I can't say anything bad about Nigel. I've learned so much about growing as a person, developing it as a man. So yeah, I've got nothing, not one bad word to say, Nigel. I love working alongside him. So we had some unbelievable times, and we're still absolute close as I speak to him at least twice a week. He obviously finds himself out of the game now. But he's a top guy, and I love him to bits.
Certainly, I'd echo those sentiments as well. So, Hartlepool, Bristol Rovers, Walsall, Newport, Exeter left. I'm going to ask you a question. You can tell me to do one, and that's perfectly acceptable. At the end of those, is it you and Daryl Clark and the lads going absolutely potty because something pretty special has been achieved? What's your gut feeling?
Listen, that was the start. What we wanted to do at the start of the season, that was the aim. We knew it was going to be difficult and challenging by the circumstances of recruiting, the amount of players we did. As I said, we knew we would get stronger towards the end of the season. The finishing line is in sight, but, you know, I'm going to say it's about Hartlepool first and foremost, and then we'll take the last four after that.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, we really do appreciate your time. All the very best to you, to Daryl, of course, and to everyone involved with Port Vale. We wish you all the very best of luck from everyone here at the official EFL podcast for the rest of the season.
Cheers, David. Good to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Well, before we go, let's have a look at the Good Friday fixtures in Sky Bet League 2. Exeter City host Colchester United in the 1 o'clock kickoff. The rest of these are all 3 o'clocks. Forest Green travel to Phil Brown's Barrow. It's Bradford versus Tranmere. Bristol Rovers at home to Salford. And Harrogate Town hosting Swindon Town. Andy Crosby's high-flying Port Vale travel to Hartlepool United as they look to continue their winning ways. Bottom club Scunthorpe United travel to Leyton Orient for a game that could rubber stamp their relegation from Sky Bet League 2, dependent, of course, on other results around them. It's Mansfield against Sutton. Newport versus Crawley. And Oldham host Northampton Town. Rochdale travel to Stevenage and Mike Flynn's Walsall welcome Carlisle United. Well, that's about it for this episode. A big thank you to our guests this week, Andy Crosby, Barry Bannon and Chris Wilder. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton, wishing you and yours a very happy Easter weekend. And join us same time next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.